Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hello, everybody. This is Colonel Allen West, the old school patriot and the author of the book Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death. We're looking at an Alamo moment in the United States of America. And if you want to take your stand on freedom ramparts, then you need to listen to Real Talk with Audrey Russo. And as Colonel William Barrett Travis said on that incredible day, February the 24th, 1836, is victory or death. And we can have victory if we listen to Audrey.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Many have heard of the war cry, Remember the Alamo, but few know the incredible victory that followed that crushing loss when Sam Houston led a ragtag army of volunteers to a stunning victory in the fight for Texas independence, as well as paving the way for America's westward expansion. And we'll learn more about this pivotal moment in American history brought to life by the work of my next guest. You may know Brian Kilmeade as co-host of Fox and Friends or as a radio talk show host of his national radio show, The Brian Kilmeade Show. Brian has over 20 years' experience as a TV anchor and radio host. He's on the air for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week. I'm tired from just reading it. And he's been doing that for over a decade. But if that's not enough, he's also a New York Times bestselling author. He's written 6 books, several of which are New York Times bestsellers, including George Washington's Secret Six, co-authored with Don Yeager, and Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. His newest and upcoming bestseller, which we're about to discuss, is Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers, the Texas victory that changed American history. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Brian Kilmeade. Welcome back, Brian.
Hey, Aubrey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate that introduction, too.
Sure. And listen, thanks.
And you got Colonel Allen West. He's one of our favorite guests, and now he's running for an important position in Texas to represent the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Always happy to give Allen a plug. Listen, thanks so much for bringing this part of American history to life. And I'll tell you, I never learned any of this in school. So thanks for doing the hard work. I want to start.
To be honest, Aubrey, I didn't know much about it either. I always thought, well, that's a Texas story. You know, that's a story of before Texas really became a state, and that Lone Star thing, that's unique to Texans.
Right.
And when Texans became such a part of the Fox audience and our listening audience, and we've had a chance to go there so often, I started getting into this story, and then I realized it truly is an American story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, you dedicated the book to your mom, a gracious lady of toughness, kindness, and loyalty. You also quoted Sam Houston's wife, Elizabeth, speaking to her sons. Did you observe a similarity in character between your mom and Mrs. Houston?
Yeah, I mean, Self's daughters, both their husbands died young when they were in their 40s. I'm not sure about Sam Houston's mom, but her dad died. His dad died when he was about 13, and then she had to raise tough kids in a very much unscripted situation in Tennessee. At which time, one of those kids would get up and move, and then he would come back and say, "Hey, I'm joining the military." Mm-hmm. And her quote basically is, "Don't be a coward. I don't want to hear about any son of mine getting shot in the back. You know, go fight and make us proud." I don't know my mom would ever say anything like that. She would be like, "Don't join. I don't want to see you hurt." But Sam, you know, back then when we were truly pioneers as a country and willing to cut our own wake as a nation and as individuals and families, Sam Houston was as tough as it got.
Yeah, absolutely. And they had to be a lot tougher than we are now. Andrew Jackson and Sam Houston held similar hopes for the American acquirement of Texas, but the undertaking presented a number of risks for the government. So why did President Jackson trust Houston to command the Texas endeavor?
You know, he mentored Houston his entire life, and I open it up because I just finished Andrew Jackson, The Miracle of New Orleans. You were kind enough to have me on then. And I wanted to pick up where I left off in the era. I had no idea how close these two were, because when I went to the Hermitage and was studying with Jackson, they didn't really talk about Sam Houston much. And I always read these ancillary referrals that, you know, Martin Van Buren played such a part with Andrew Jackson, and they always talk about Sam Houston. I'm saying to myself, I wonder if there's something there. And sure enough, he fought under him in the Creek War. He was able to prove his valor that way. And his whole life, Jackson saw a lot of Houston in him. Houston considerably taller, maybe gruffer, and he looked up to Jackson because of his political instincts and his leadership ability. He would end up getting both and acquire both those tremendous qualities, although differently. And I think that both those two realized in their era, at different ages, there's no reason why Texas should have been part of Mexico or Spain.
Right.
Because the Jefferson and Jackson and many others were convinced that this came of the Louisiana Purchase, and there was some dispute on that. And in 1819, they finally signed off and told Spain, "All right, I'm going to take Florida. Just renounce it. You take Texas." And after they did, and Spain had their own political problems and it became Mexico, they were never able to populate it. And so many Americans would look at Texas and say, "I'm going." And, you know, prices, believe it or not, I kind of laughed out loud, were getting high in America at that time. And if you want cheap prices, and after Stephen F. Austin cut a great deal of 300 families, you get all this acreage for very little money and very little taxes for 10 years. He was filling up quick with people that wanted a new opportunity in the new world. So they both looked at Texas and said it should have been there, never negotiated away. It's becoming just quickly mostly Anglos anyway.
Yeah.
So they were willing to, at the right time, make the move. Sam Houston came at the right time when they had no choice, because when Santa Anna takes over Mexico, his line was, "My people are not ready for liberty." Well, part of his people was Texas.
Yeah.
And you don't tell that to a bunch of Americans.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he didn't speak very highly of his people. He thought they were pretty ignorant and that they needed to be led. But, yeah, that's not Texans. Not then and not now, I think.
Stephen F. Austin was trying to keep it all together, and he was a wonderful diplomat, a great salesperson, and loved to keep sides. He wanted to keep them in Mexico because that was the deal he cut. But after a while, after they threw him in jail for even bringing it up, he said he came back a changed man and said in 1836, "We're going to have to fight our way out of this."
Yeah, yeah. In Chapter 6, The Defenders, you share that many of the troops who fought for Texas independence were getting a second chance at establishing lives, you know, for freedom in the West. What made them leave the comfort of their home states?
Great question. Some running from the law, no doubt. Some bad marriages, no question. You know, some just wanted a new opportunity. I give you Davy Crockett, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Davy Crockett was a politician and famous. Someone wrote a book on him, made him bigger than life. He wrote his own. Both were bestsellers. he was under Jackson for a long time, and then he ran afoul of Jackson. Didn't like the way Jackson was leading the country. So Jackson did something very Trumpian. He organized an effort to make sure he didn't win his next election, and he didn't. He picked up at 34. He goes to Texas. You know, Jim Bowie always looking for new challenges. His wife and kid died of a mysterious illness. He's looking for a fresh start. He ends up there. William Travis, a problem with his wife, gets in a dispute. He's a lawyer. He decides to start fresh in Texas with nothing and work his way up. So many would show up, says, don't ask any questions. Let's get going.
Right.
And they would go from there. So a lot of people were there for different. It was an exciting place. What I was most intrigued by, Audrey, is that the things they told us about Texas, that John Wayne made it seem like Texas, that they always talk about it, the rugged way in which they live and the pride they have, it all is true. It happened. These people were tougher, and they were cut from a different cloth, and they did have to make their own way, and they were constantly under threat, whether it was the American Indians who looked at them as people trespassing or as Mexicans looking for them to stay in line. And no, it was not easy. The supermarkets weren't open 24 hours. There were no roads.
Yeah.
You got your acreage, and you had to live off your land.
Yeah.
And you had to make money. And so many times they'd come down with nothing but credit. And they'd have to get their patch of land and make it work. And it was just a remarkable story. And without winning the West, in which they did, and I don't want to give it all away, but people who don't know, the direct battle, the ultimate victory, happened in 18 minutes. And it happened because Sam Houston doesn't just fight. He learned when to fight. And he learned that in the first story in the book in 1812 when he almost got killed because he had nothing but courage. And he realized, if I just show courage and don't use my brains, I'm going to end up dead. And that's what he had to instill in his people. That's what he learned from Jackson. And it still took him a year to deliver as president of Texas, to deliver Texas. Took him 9 years to deliver Texas to this country.
Yeah. He taught them how to think on their feet, which... Well, they had to. They didn't have a choice, really. What do you think 21st century Americans can glean from these patriotic warriors' ability to overcome obstacles?
You just said in your question, overcoming obstacles, being resourceful. Understand, they were not people that followed orders, and it almost broke up the army.
Mm.
I mean, if they weren't fighting, they were drinking and looking to go home. Like, I'm here to fight. What's going on? And Houston would say, no, wait a second. We can't fight today. We're outnumbered. They're better organized. And we're not even drilled. There's no cohesion between the units. And everybody was unruly. Everyone had their own agendas. And Houston had to get them together like herding cats. And I think I went out of my way to make sure people understood how hard a job he had and how many enemies he still had in his lifetime that believed that success was overstated. I don't. But there are people that I've given the books to read it and go, yeah, I think you made Houston look too good. Other people say I didn't make him look good enough. So I try to stick to the facts and use his quotes and then see the results. But I think we can learn, number one, in our country, we're not guaranteed happiness. We're not guaranteed land, not guaranteed income. We're not guaranteed a great family. We are guaranteed the opportunity to pursue all those things. And that's what they saw in Texas, an opportunity to be successful. Which today is special, but it was extraordinary then, because where you were born back then is where you lived. Now, my parents didn't have money. I'm not going to have money. My parents had a lot of money. I'm going to have a lot of money. They're going to have great jobs. I'm going to have a great job. But in America, start over, baby. And in Texas, start over after starting over.
Yeah, yeah. In chapter 8 and 9, that's the massacre and bring out the dead, you shared that most of the crushing deaths from the Battle of the Alamo, and you named them the heroes, Jim Bowie, Davy Crockett, William Travis. How has the concept of American war heroes changed by those deaths?
Number one, they didn't win.
Yeah.
Number two, it's not winning, it's how you fought and how you died that makes your legacy live forever. I mean, we all got a certain swath in which we're going to live. Who knows when that number's up. When these guys' number's up, they're in the prime of their life. There are a lot of famous people in there. There are about 180 men and women and children were in there, but not fighting. And they were going against about 3,000 to 5,000. And they held out for 13 days, and they were relentless in their fighting. Every one of them lost their lives, was killed. Their bodies were piled up, and they were burned. And because of the way they fought and the ugly way in which they died, it inspired the revolution in a way Santa Anna was the exact inverse way the Mexican leader thought it would be. He thought they would cower and say, this is not worth it. Instead, they doubled down. And when word came out to the rest of America, more filed in to help. So I think the way you live and the way you die has more to do with how you're going to be remembered than maybe is appreciated.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Chapter 10, okay, Houston, here's the news. We learn how the brutal massacre at the Alamo, followed by the advance of Mexican troops, persuaded Houston to retreat. So how was it possible his weakened army would then defeat what they was known as the Napoleon of the West, Santa Anna?
More time, the runaway scrape, more time to drill, more time to train, more time to analyze, more time to get intelligence, more time to shape the battlefield, whether you'll be surrounded by water, there'll be only one place to clash, you'll have enough numbers, and we know exactly what he's up against. So when reinforcements showed up the day before the battle, people thought, why were you delaying? Well, he had no choice, they weren't quite ready. But the problem is those reinforcements were exhausted. And when it became clear in those days you weren't fighting early, it usually meant you weren't fighting at all because you couldn't fight at night. And when he decides to get up at 10, have his war council meet at 12, and decide to fight at 2, he had no idea that the Mexicans who had piled their guns into a pile and were resting. And it was a series of events that go throughout American history that break our way to allow us to exceed logic and be successful. And to not only win, but to capture Santa Anna alive and have the composure not to get revenge and kill him like he murdered him in cold blood like he did the Alamo, yeah, and Davy Crockett in particular, and Goliad, which is the other fort which is chronicled here, where people were killed,
right,
and executed. He said, no, I'm going to treat you like an officer. You're going to sign this paper turning over Texas. You're going to sign another one telling the reinforcements to turn around. And they did. And these are the events that I think Americans need to know about.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned at the intro that the war cry that people have heard, remember the Alamo, but there was also remember Goliad, just what you mentioned that I had no idea about until I read the book. I had no idea. They were POWs, weren't they, that were executed?
Yeah, I mean, they were in a battle. Jim Fannin is a star-crossed character in this, went to West Point for 2 years, but seems to have made a series of bad mistakes. He gets caught in the middle of a battlefield. He immediately sets up a square circle, kills some horses, uses them as his shield, and they're ready to fight to the death. They got better guns, but the Mexicans have more guys. When they realize he kind of knew the other officer and the officer kind of knew him, they cut a deal and they said, listen, we can kill each other all day. You're an officer, I'm an officer. We'll treat you with respect. You have my word. Let's go back to the fort once you just left, Goliad, and then we'll work out a way for you to go back and just as long as you don't fight anymore. So he thinks he saved a lot of people's lives. Instead, he's been duped. Word gets to Santa Anna. He says, what don't you understand about absolute victory, no quarter? So they say, okay, guys, we're going to march you home, 200 this way, 200 that way. And as they get about 100 yards from each other, the soldiers turn around and shoot him in point-blank range. And some got away and were able to tell Sam Houston the story, and they reconnect with the Army. And that motivates him even more. So the Santa Anna misread the American spirit. They aren't going to cower. They were going to now fight for more people instead of quit because of the way they were killed.
Yeah, Santa Anna, yeah, exactly, misread the Texans, the Americans, because look how he looked at his own people. So I'm sure that kind of tainted how he saw Americans.
You obviously read the book, and I appreciate it. He treated his people as just necessary pawns to getting his glory. But yet he had so many lives and had so many ventures. I don't know how he did it. He's been exiled so many times, caught and captured. But Santa Anna is a pretty formidable character.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the end, I think people are going to learn because he ends up meeting Jackson to make this whole thing go full circle. And ultimately, Jackson made sure that he got a chance to go back to Mexico. And then for 9 years, we couldn't absorb and get this support for annexing Texas because it was a slave state, technically, even though there weren't that many slaves there, and they didn't want to mess up the balance in the country because we're already teetering on civil war. But 9 years later, he would get it done, and it would happen in Jackson's lifetime, but not during his presidency.
Right. Actually, the book provoked me to do a little research to find a letter from Houston to Jackson about warning them that England was even looking at Texas if America didn't take it into the Union.
Absolutely. England was going to be an option. And he probably wasn't going to do it because of the history,
right.
But it would have provided security because the Mexicans never accepted this, this signed paper. They said Santa Anna did it under duress, and when he got captured, he was no longer leader of the country. So they were constantly being probed across the border. And if the Americans said no, if Washington said no, he would have went there, no question. And no one would have faulted him.
Yeah. Do you believe that Houston's tactics could ever be used in modern warfare?
Victories? Well, I think he was. I mean, he basically used scorched earth. As he was retreating for those days and weeks, not looking to run away because he wasn't ready to fight Santa Anna, he was burning towns. So it's kind of what the Russians did twice, once to Napoleon and once to Hitler. Kept sucking him in, sucking him in, sucking him in. And at one point he thought, I could bring my army, what I have of it, into America and be safe because they never probed there. Or I could set the shape the battlefield so I at least have a chance of winning, because he knew I'd have one fight, and whether I win or lose, I'd only have one.
Right. Well, at the book's conclusion, we see how Houston pressed for Texas annexation in the Union, into the Union. How do you think Texas would have fared as a sovereign state if it hadn't become part of the United States?
That's a good question that they examine all the time. They were building a mini navy. I think they could. They're bigger, as big as some countries. So it would have been that size. That's a great question. I couldn't do the economics, but my sense is they have everything they need to be their own country, the Lone Star State. I know one thing, America wouldn't be the same, because without that victory, we wouldn't have opened up the West for New Mexico and California, which we'd ultimately get in 1845 in the Mexican War, which is controversial, but it's where a lot of our great leaders in the Civil War cut their teeth and learned to fight. So our whole history, Audrey, would have been different.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I don't think enough Americans realize this, because it's pretty exciting. Sam Houston's leadership ability, we saw it was evident. Okay, he was twice the president of the Republic of Texas. He was also a governor of Tennessee and both a senator and a governor of Texas. Do you believe there's a leader today that would be able to navigate or balance those kinds of political waters?
I'm sure they're out there, and a lot of them are in business. I mean, a lot of them don't want to get into politics.
Right.
I mean, there are some quality leaders today, but I don't think they're. I mean, the fearlessness of Trump, you have to have, I guess, the calculation and the intellect of Obama. I mean, there's hybrid. President Obama had some great qualities. Quick decisions were in him. Donald Trump's got some great qualities. A lot of deliberation is not one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes on gut and goes on instinct. Mm-hmm. George Bush made a lot of gutsy, selfless decisions along the way. When I look back in today, I don't know of any leaders that people look up to. I mean, King Abdullah has done a great job somehow holding Jordan together. We have some great generals. I mean, General Petraeus, he had a misstep at the CIA, no question. Nobody questions that, nor does he. But man, would he do a great job in almost any situation. When I met General Mattis, he lives up to the hype in every way. General Kelly seems to have that background. I mean, we got a great General McChrystal who writes books on leadership. We have some great leaders that chose not to get into politics,
right. But
you got to be selfless. You got to have humility, and you have to have experience. And we got some great ones here, but I don't know if everyone has all the qualities, but Sam Houston, far from perfect. He drank too much. He was reckless as a kid, as a young man.
Yeah.
He had that scandal, this horrible thing called divorce, which he was forced to resign the governorship from. That was controversy back then. He also went and lived with, I don't think this is a negative at all.
No.
He lived with Cherokee Indians.
Yeah.
and it really shaped who he was. He was somebody who cared about the environment and did not like the way America treated the American Indian.
Right.
So he was not perfect. But Sam Houston had the right qualities at the right time. In his 20s, he couldn't have done it. After these years of experience of checking his ego and having mistakes and having humiliation, of having to give up the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
And going back in and being censored by Congress because he beat another lawmaker with a cane for saying bad things about him.
Yeah, right.
So all those things came together to make Sam Houston the person who was ready for the moment. How does he end up? He ends up not drinking, meeting a great woman, having 9 kids, and by almost all accounts, being a wonderful parent.
Yeah, yeah.
Also walked away from the governorship because he did not want to join the Confederacy. Because he didn't think it's union or nothing. He knew the Confederacy was going to lose. And he said, I want this country whole. He was all for unity. And when Texas outvoted him, he said, oh, good, then keep the job. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great quality.
It's very admirable. Absolutely. I love it. Listen, you wrote this in such a way, it's so exciting. Might there be talk of a film in the future? Say yes.
I think it would be great. I think it would be great. They did Texas Rising, which talks about some of this. And I would love it. I also think Andrew Jackson would be a great movie. They're working on Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates for a 3-part series on history. And I think people will love that because I don't think people know this about Jefferson.
No.
And the thing that got me into this the whole time was George Washington's Secret Six, the spy ring that saved the American Revolution. I believe that is fundamentally better than National Treasure, which is fictional, and better than The Patriot, which might as well have been fictional. I think Americans would love this true civilian spy story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Brian, a final and critical question. Where can the listeners follow and support all your excellent work and purchase all these books that we've mentioned?
Barnes & Noble is huge. They've been a huge supporter of the book. I would love you, if you guys want to personalize for the holidays, briankilmeade.com. It goes to my local bookstore. And then I'll have instructions on who to write it to. And anywhere you get books, if you're like me, I download a lot of my books so I can highlight them. So if you're more comfortable with that, that's great too.
Excellent. And as always, I'll have these links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the on-air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and information you need that Brian just shared. Thanks so much, Brian, for taking the time to share this brilliant work. Will you join us again on the show? Yes.
Absolutely. And my book tour is up now on briankilmeade.com. Just click on tour. And hopefully I'm coming to a city for one of your listeners to join me. That'll be great. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks. And until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Bye.